versus what they actually know they're going to have to pay, there is a shortfall between mm-hmm. the two.
Finally,
and I've not come across anybody right now, sorry, Greg, yeah. that actually has all their costs met by this scheme.
So
some
none.
Are closer yeah.
so,
than others.
So far, it's none. So far, in terms of people you've engaged with, it's none. And that's fine. I just was curious because you're chatting to a lot of people. Very finally, any possibility this meeting could be streamed for people tonight?
I'm not sure, Greg.
But if someone tech savvy can, maybe they can. All right. Listen, Lisa, I'll remind people after the news, and let us know if it is, and we'll share the links. I'll remind people after the news about what's going on tonight. Lisa, thanks for your time. Very much appreciated. I hope you know that. Okay, take care. Right, coming up in the next hour, we will be answering your smart meter questions. Have you any questions as it relates to smart meters? Get them into us right now. 086 60 25,000. Brendan Devaney is going to be joining us, telling us what's coming up on tonight's DL debate, and that there's much more besides that as well, of course. So stay right where you are. Okay, just to remind you that meeting, the Defective Concrete Block Scheme Information Evening, is tonight at 7 p.m. on Green and Hotel Burt. And Lisa said that they're going to try and get it streamed. That's going to be a tough ask at this late notice, but they're going to try off the back of a couple of queries we had into the show. Right, okay. Brendan Devaney, presenter of the DL Debate, is on with us. Brent, good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. Good. Yourself?
Good to see you. Right, okay. This week's DL Debate. Firstly, what did you make of the hurling yesterday?
Yeah, listen, powerful. It was just thinking who's going to stop us. Limerick machine, you know, it's absolutely phenomenal. 21 points in the second half. It just, you look at them other four in a row teams. And I remember Kilkenny actually when they were stopped doing the five, and there was teams really having to cut at them. And I know Tipperary did earlier in the championship, but you're just looking at this Limerick team. The physicality of them, you know, the skill is undoubted and the ability, but some of them guys, you know, the height and the strength that they have, it just seems like, and I wouldn't mind, they're missing a couple of their best players.
Second half was superhuman stuff, wasn't it? I mean, it was like, how are humans capable of this this type of physicality, skill and accuracy?
To match that kind of size and power with that quickness of skill, it's ominous, I think, for everybody else going in the next season, because...
All right, that signal's not fantastic. We'll just wait till it settles down a little bit, and it will. If you want a quick word on the sport, 086 60 25,000. Right, Brent, sorry, you just cut off there, but you're back with us. It's going to be an interesting conversation.
I'm in the door here. Sorry, Greg, I'm in the door. I'm not in my usual spot. My apologies.
I know, that's a Gwydor tan you have. I could recognise that, all right. come here, an interesting conversation too with Brendan Kilcoyne about Donegal's search for a new manager. You know, we're hearing lots of people that people would like in that position ruling themselves out. Are we getting anyone ruling themselves in?
Yeah, there's been a couple of names put forward, Greg, at this point. And there's looking like there's going to be a group set up, a committee of ex-players, a few from 92 and 2012, and they are going to go and look into the possibilities, Greg, you know, taking on board the couple of nominations, but also searching out people that would be interested in the job. So I think that's the best way it needs to be handled, Greg. Give it to this group, let them oversee it, and let them get the right peoples for the job.
It seems if we want All-Ireland, Donegal All-Ireland winners involved in this, we're going to have to go back to 92.
Yeah, well, listen, the names that mentioned, I've had a few talks to people in the background at setting up the group. So the people that's coming in, Greg, are very experienced, and they'd be well got. They have loads of connections around the area. So, listen, I was very happy to hear the names that are involved. So I think we need to just let them go and get the right people for the job, as I say.
Life Stories returns tonight. You've got Paddy Bonner in studio with you. I'm not sure how many interviews he's done where the principal focus is his GEA background.
Yeah, well, I think Paddy's such a hero, Greg, that we can talk to him about anything, can't we? You know, the nostalgia there is just unbelievable. Of course, yeah, we'll have a chat to him about growing up and about a GEA because, listen, we are a GEA show, but at the end of the day, you know, I think most people in Donegal like a bit of soccer as well. And certainly when it comes to Paddy Bonner, anything we talk about is going to be great. Just looking, just small things, Greg, about his early days. You know, he was over in Leicester in a trial before Celtic. His pathway in his life could have been so different, but as it turns out, it didn't happen for him in that trial. He was only 17 then doing his leaving cert, but he ended up coming to Celtic. He had family over there, the huge Irish connections there. He was able to stay with family initially, and just his trajectory then through Celtic, you know, the brilliance of, you know, four league titles and cups and that, and then, of course, Ireland, Germany, you know, Italia 90, USA 94 was just, I mean, it was phenomenal time. And being a young fella growing up then, Greg, it's massive for me to even get to talk to him. I've met him a few times, you know, very, very nice man, and everybody's really down to earth. So it's brilliant to kind of just cruise through his life, and his, particularly his early days out west, and a bit of GAA played, and then, and as I say, the career that he had.
Yeah, and you won't make the same mistake that I make and leave out any of the local clubs that he played for, because it gets people's back up. Okay. Right, so the show... the show's live just after the 7 p.m. news tonight. Podcast then for you to listen at your leisure, whether you're out for a walk, whatever, on highlandradio.com. And the DL Debate is brought to you in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's, Letterkenny. Brian, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, just very quickly, I have a great reference point, the one and only Kieran O'Donnell, of course, the man of many talents that contributes to Ireland Radio. Of course, he has a book, Donegal Legends, where he took 10 Donegal sporting heroes and read up about their brilliant achievements and such, icons of the county, and Paddy Bonner's in that. So Kieran O'Donnell made my life very easy, researching Paddy Bonner. Thank you, Kieran.
All right, good stuff. Well done. And nice to spread the love. Take care, Brent. Brendan Devaney there, DL Debate Live at 7 tonight, and then you can podcast it when you want to. Okay, we just got a reference there to Kieran O'Donnell. What link is he coming in on, just to make sure I have that correctly? Just double check it. Yeah, well, he's not there at the moment then. Let me see. How can you replace foundations when you haven't a penny to your name? Well, see, that's it. With the flooding over the weekend, is there any guidelines or regulations for farmers for their drainage systems? Let's not forget, generations ago, we had a Donegal Town-based office that had all the joined-up thinking to deal with issues like that. But we don't have that anymore. And then it's like, well, that department, or well, that department, or that organisation, and... there's talk, and we don't move any further. Just back to sport, sorry. Wouldn't bet against this Limerick team becoming the first ever county winning 5 hurling titles in a row. Would be some achievement considering they won just once, 1973, in the 78 years prior to this golden generation making the breakthrough in 2018. Indeed, who would bet against it? Not me. Not with my money, anyway. I'd bet with someone else's money, but I certainly wouldn't bet with my own. Thanks for all the communications. Keep them coming. We will have much more over the course of this hour. Right, you heard a reference there from Brendan to Kieran O'Donnell. By coincidence, we welcome onto the show now Kieran O'Donnell, presenter of Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast. Kieran, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Making Brendan Devaney's job handy. He's just reading the chapter on Paddy Bonner before the interview tonight.
I chatted on them during the weekend there, so glad to help my old colleague as usual.
Yeah, exactly. Right, okay, we're talking business now. Big news, Letterkenny Shopping Centre has been sold for €74 million. What's the background to this exchange, Kieran?
Yeah, as you say, €74 million. It was part of a lengthy process, Greg. The Shopping Centre is part owned by the Hexagon portfolio, or is part of the Hexagon portfolio. And there were 6 shopping centres built by Harcourt Developments, and Harcourt Developments is owned by Buncrana developer Pat Doherty. Now, initially, the asking price was $100 million, and according to reports, a lengthy process ensued, but the bottom line is it was sold for $74, as you said. The other shopping centres are located in Dublin, Galway, Leash, Limerick and Dundalk.
Right, and what was the process of the sale? Apollo Global Management were involved in this process?
Yeah, it was widely reported for the last number of months. Obviously, the asking price had a fall of it. So the local angle here is obviously a local developer built the shopping centre and is part of a 6 shopping centre group that has been sold now in its entirety.
All right. Now, what does this mean in terms of the future? These are obviously attractive because they're going concern. So really, from a consumer's perspective, not an awful lot should change, I'd imagine.
I don't think so, Greg. I suppose when Kerry rang me this morning, we were talking about it, going back to the start of the Letterkenny Championship. The construction got underway in the early 80s and it opened in 1985. It was the start of it was the first of its kind in Letterkenny and Donegal. So it was a major turning point, I suppose, in making Letterkenny a much more attractive place to come in terms of retail. And in terms of employment at that stage, you would have had Unify, the hospital, IMED, and Letterkenny Regional College was still a relatively small college at that stage as well, Greg. So it was the start of a whole new change. Letterkenny went from a two-way traditional traffic thoroughfare to one-way. And while it was a reason for people to come into Letterkenny, it was also a reason for people not to come into the heart of the town. And that was a major sort of milestone or turning point as well in the whole retail area. Letterkenny Courtyard Shopping Centre was opened about 10 years later, Greg. And that brought people back onto Letterkenny's main street. And then we have the construction of the Letterkenny Retail Park in two phases in the early 2000s and the mid-2000s, bringing large, well-known anchor tenants. So going back to the start of it's 38 years ago now since the Shelby Centre was opened. A long time ago, it was Quinsworth and Pennies at that stage were the two main anchor tenants, Greg, and then Quinsworth obviously changed to Tesco. And both stores underwent huge expansions. Pennies was doubled in size, I think, about 2004. So obviously, big reasons for people to come to Letterkenny, and even talking to hoteliers, and that one of the reasons that a lot of people come to Letterkenny is for brands like Pennies to come and do their shopping there.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. All right, okay. We'll see how things pan out. Kieran, as always, thank you for your time. Enjoy the rest of your day.
See you Wednesday, Greg.
All right, see you Wednesday, Kieran. Good man. All right, back with more shortly. Now, Monday Focus, we revisit the issue of smart meters. Carmel O'Connor is ESB Network Smart Metering Project Manager and joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Carmel.
Morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. Right, so a lot of progress seems to have been made since we last spoke. How many smart meters have been installed so far across the country? And I suppose what is the, you know, what is the 100% mark?
Yeah, well, to date now, we've got almost 1.4 million meters installed. So that would be for what we call MCC01 customers. So that would be a customer who's on a 24-hour register, just has one unit kind of billing. And the aim for us is to get to about 2 million meters by the end of next year. And to get to that from September of this year, we're going to start exchanging day-night meters. So anybody who's kind of has an MCC02 and has a day-night tariff, we'll be doing a like-for-like exchange of those meters. And we're also going to start exchanging for people who have, say, night storage heating. So, yeah, the aim is by the end of 2024, we should have 2 million meters.
And how many meters are out there sort of in residential, I wonder?
There's a total of about 2.4 million meters there, but I would say that 400,000 that we're probably not going to get to until about 25, 26 are kind of more oddball niche ones. But for the vast majority of customers, like we have 75% of the MCC01, so that's somebody who's on just a 24-hour register meter. 75% of those meters have already been exchanged. So, yeah, we reckon by the end of 2024, we'll have 80-85% of all meters replaced with a smart meter. So we're really, really pleased with the progress.
Yeah, smart meters became one of those items that attracted the attention of certain individuals of a certain mindset. A lot of information was put out there, and we have a lot of those questions a few of those questions we covered. They're simple enough questions for you to answer. But my point I was getting to, sorry, is we have people that are nervous of them, and we'll talk about whether there should or should not be. But a question that's going to come in is, do I have to get a smart meter? I'm a little bit weary about it. For whatever reason, how do I sort of not get a smart meter if I don't want? I know that's counterintuitive to the work that you do, Carmel, but it's a question that is going to come in and has come in. Can you opt out?
You're right. It's completely counterintuitive because from my perspective, the smart meters are doing nothing but good. There's very, very little difference between your normal digital meter and a smart meter, except that the smart meter kind of basically sends a text every couple of hours with a more up-to-date reading. But yeah, if somebody really wants to say no to a smart meter, and some people, a small percentage, have said no, you just drop us an email, send us a letter, phone the call center and say you don't want a smart meter. But I personally, like, you're right, it's my role, but it's not just my job. Like, I actually had got a smart meter before I even went into the smart metering program. I just happened to be on a list because, to me, the benefits far outweigh any negativities. I don't see the negativities myself. I know I have seen some posters with, and I know what you're saying, but it's misinformation. There's been a poster up saying, say no to a smart meter because of higher bills. One of the things that we're really trying to let people know is that the smart meter exchanges are a like-for-like exchange. So all it means is that we will take actual readings off of the meter every 2 months. You do not have to change unless you want to. Some of the suppliers allow a customer to get their interval data, so that's their every half hour, but they don't have to change the tariff that they're on. It's still the 24-hour tariff, but it allows a customer to get information, and some of them give energy insights onto how you could save electricity or what tariff would suit you better. And then ESB Networks has a customer portal, so if a customer chooses to go on to a smart, doesn't choose for a smart meter tariff, but they can create an account, they can link their MPRN number, and they can see their interval data, just them. It's a graph or a downloadable file, so that you can actually see, when am I using my electricity most? Is there a way that I could change the way I use my electricity to save myself money if I go on to a new tariff? And one of the things that we've seen is now there's a lot more electric vehicle owners now opting to get looking for a smart meter, and then opting, because I think there's about four different suppliers that offer a super cheap night rate for charging their vehicle. So we're seeing more and more EV owners looking for a smart meter.
But it's very important, and I mean, you're responsible for the network. It's very important that people actually look at the options that are there. Some of those nighttime saver options, you're paying a higher unit rate during the day than you might be already. So people have to scrutinize that and find out what's best for them. Maybe they don't change at all, but just because it's cheaper at night, make sure you look at the day rate as well, and see how you use your electricity and how you may or may not benefit.
And that's why the customer portal, where a customer, before they ever go near their supplier, they can download, we have a HDF, and you can play around with seeing your usage, seeing what the different tariffs are. And if you know how to use a spreadsheet at all, you stick in your different tariffs, and then you can decide. And exactly what you say, if it doesn't suit, stay with what you're on. And if it does suit, look around at the different options from different suppliers and go with the one that where you can actually save money.
I possibly could get the door of my meter box open. I haven't tried to, and I don't have the triangular key. I may or may not have a smart meter. I don't know if I got the notification or not. That's not a ESB problem. That's a me problem. Is there any way, without me opening that box, that I can determine whether or not I have a smart meter?
Yes, you should know by your bill. If you've got a bill with your supplier, the supplier will have what we call an ORM number is usually on it. So it will tell you if it's an ORM 106 or an ORM 107, it's a smart meter. Otherwise, it's not. Some of the suppliers also kind of will let you know whether you have a smart meter, because they need to know. So that'll determine when they offer you different smart tariffs, if they have them.
You might have seen the signs as well that say that smart meters give off more radiation. They've been linked to 5G, though. I'm sitting here now with a 5G phone in my pocket, probably too close to where it should be. But anyway, be that as it may, these maybe arguments are becoming more redundant as 5G becomes more
I'll stop you there. Meter does not work on 5G.
Okay,
The vast majority of our smart meters work on 2G, and some of them, if the 2G is poor, the newer meters will also work on what's called MBIOT, which is a form of 4G, but they're not 5G. Now, I'm not saying there's anything right or wrong with 5G.
I know that, just to be clear,
but
yep.
The meters are not.
Now, but what about, they give off a lot of radiation?
Not true. Again, if somebody wants to have a look at all of the facts, they're on the ESB Networks website, but they do not, like, they have to comply to a certain World Health Organization standards. The meters that we purchase absolutely adhere to all those standards. But even independent testing that we've got, the emissions from them are tiny. Like they're, as you say, your phone, lots of other equipment in your house would have way more emissions. So it's, again, from my perspective, it's one of the bits of misinformation that are out there about a smart meter.
All right, now we'll get to the more practical questions in a moment, but just whilst we get run through these ones, this is useful, Carmel. I presume you can see the benefit in it. But anyway, I went out to read my meter and I discovered my meter had been replaced to a smart meter without my permission. For whatever reason, they want it removed and the old system returned. Can you retrofit once the smart meter's gone in? I presume that's it, that it's in there.
It's in. Like, we have a customer journey that we follow, which was agreed with the Commission for Regulation of Utilities. So we send out an initial letter that gives a customer, I'd say, well, first of all, you would have heard the ads. So there's advertising goes out on local radio stations in local papers saying smart meters are coming to your area. Then we specifically send out a letter to each customer that gives about 8 to 12 weeks notice. Then a second letter goes out that gives another 6 to 8 weeks notice from the deployment contractor. And if the meter is in an outdoor meter box, if the customer has not come back and said, we don't want a smart meter, and because it's such a straightforward changeover, like a deployment contractor is usually there max of about 45 minutes. The without supply is with less than 30 minutes. So if it's an outdoor meter cabinet and we have access, we can go in, because don't forget, like, it's an ESB Networks piece of equipment. And in a lot of cases, the meters can be very old and they're due to be changed anyway for accuracy, because the smart meters, as well as obviously giving you the register reads, the day night peak register reads and your interval data, they're also helping us by giving us more information if there's over or under voltage. And that information comes back to ESB Networks and it's helping us to do the low voltage planning in locations around the country, because that information is really good. But if there's nobody there and it's an outdoor meter cabinet, because it's our equipment and nobody has said don't change the meter, we can exchange the meter. And once we've followed the customer journey,
yeah, I presume, I presume, Carmel, to some extent, resistance is futile. I imagine having one of the old boxes in a couple of years would be like having the old TV aerial on your roof, expecting up to pick up channels when it's been switched off effectively. You know, there is going to come a point, is there not, whereby these are not serviceable or won't be serviced, and eventually, regardless of what people, regardless of what people say or want, they will all be smart meters.
I think you're right. I think less and less companies are manufacturing the old style digital meters, and definitely nobody that I'm aware of is out there manufacturing those old rotating disc meters. You would probably have seen the old rotating disc meters. Some people say refer to them as analog meters. So they're like 30, 40, 50 years old. So they're definitely not made anymore. And I agree, like how less and less companies make non-smart mobile phones. It's that sort of idea. So eventually I would imagine the only meters that will be supplied by metering companies will be smart.
Do you have any idea of how many of the 1.3 smart meters installed, how many people have opted for smart meter plans? As I say, I know there's a network, and then
about 14%, about 14% of customers have gone for smart services or a smart tariff. Out there. So I know it sounds low, but I think we're in the most cases, Irish people like to have it in for a while. They like to see what their usage is, and they want it in for that full year so that they can kind of see when they're using it, when their peak is, when there isn't. But we are, again, seeing a lot more people now are going out and getting solar panels, and those customers, like, we have a 4-month window agreed with CRU from the time somebody sends in an NC6 form to ESB Networks to say they have solar panels to look at to for us to get the meter in. But customers, once they get their solar panels, they want that smart meter in so that if they're exporting to the network that they can get paid. So we would have a lot of customers now who are kind of looking for smart meters because they want to get paid for any export that they have.
Anne-Marie wants to know, can a person ask where to place the smart meter outside? Or does it have to be placed beside the meter box that, you know, in other words, it have to replace the one that was there? Or is there any discretion?
Yeah, the program that we're doing is a like-for-like replacement. So where we're using the installers, it's wherever the meter was, we take it out and we put the new meter in. There is an option if you ring ESB Networks directly that you want, if you want to pay for the meter to be moved. So if you had an indoor meter box and you wanted to move it outdoors, unfortunately, that's a separate, like that would be a local network technician would be doing that work. And it's a job that you have to pay for to move it.
A caller says, they put a smart meter in my house a year ago and asked if I want it activated, but I never replied. I'm not sure if it's activated already or do I have to do this myself?
Okay, I'm not quite sure what that means.
No, I know that
a smart, well, I'll tell you now, a smart meter, when it goes in, it takes, it has what we call a 30-day proving period. So that's where it's connecting to the network and we make sure that it connects. So in some cases, there might be really, really poor connectivity and the meter won't connect, in which case a meter reader would still need to come. You can still get your day-night peak tariff because you can get the three registered reads. But after 30 days, we know whether the meter is connecting never, it's connecting every day. And that means then a customer can go and they can look for maybe a half hourly time of use tariff. So that would be like maybe somebody who has an electric vehicle that wants a cheap rate or wants a free Saturday or a free Sunday with their supplier. And that's really it. But once the meter has connected, we automatically pull the reads every 2 months. So I'm not quite sure what that means by activated. I'd say it could be just that misinterpretation of what we mean.
It could be a company that says, you know, you're now on a smart meter. Do you want to move to this plan? But listen, you answered it there.
Yeah, it could be.
I have a smart meter. Do I still need to send in meter readings to my electricity company? I continue to get emails from them. Thanks. Does that happen automatically or does it vary from company to company, I wonder?
I think it varies from company to company. Sometimes a bill will say the CTF number, what we call it, comms technically feasible. If that's a one and we have to send a meter reader, well, then I would say you probably do have to do that. But that's in less than 2% of homes, 98%, 96 to 98% of the homes that we have a smart meter in, we're able to pull that register read. But I think we do it 2 monthly because the SLA with the suppliers that we have is every 2 months. I know some suppliers bill monthly and that could be why they're still using the looking for a read, or it could be just their systems haven't changed because they're not used to having the automatic reads yet and they're still asking customers to send in their reads.
This is off the back of a couple of questions. I've kind of merged them together. Effectively, at the moment, getting your meter changed is free. Does there come a point where someone has an analog meter and maybe it breaks down or whatever and they have to switch to a smart meter or they're no longer being serviced? Does there come a point where it's going to cost people to switch to a smart meter?
I don't think so. Like you're right, if there's a fault exchange, it depends, I think, on when somebody goes out, like if it was an old meter. But I have a feeling we're not charging if a smart meter goes in instead of say an analog or an old digital meter. I don't think we're charging, but I don't know off the top of my head. I'm kind of guessing there. But the plan is that if somebody is changing as part of our program, and like I say, our program is going to go on for another couple of years. It'll be going on into 2026 for those last few oddball-y ones, not the normal kind of 24-hour register, day-night register ones. It will definitely, we'll be picking them up and we'll be exchanging them for free. So I know that some customers initially might have said, look, I don't want a smart meter, and they've said they didn't want it. And then they go and they get solar panels, or they talk to friends or neighbors who have actually experienced, you know, the free Saturday, they're saving money, and they go, oh, wait a minute, I want to change my mind. I want to get that smart meter. They can just contact us and it goes on the exchange list and there's no cost.
A caller says, I received no letter or notification from the ESB, but came home to my outside box being changed. When do they plan to charge for fitting of the meters? Sorry, that's two different ones. So you've answered the fitting one. The first one, sorry. We do get a lot of contact from people. And I know you talked about a customer experience, Carmel. We get a lot of notifications. This person's not necessarily saying they want it out or whatever. But there does seem to be quite a lot of people that find themselves with a smart meter having never been notified, or they feel they were never notified of one being put in.
I'm wondering, is it just a feeling? Because what I would say is, if any to date, any customers that have said that they didn't get any letters, our systems are showing that they got the two letters. Now, unless there's something has gone wrong with the post, or maybe it got lost in, you know, yourself, junk mail and things like that. But like, I can't think of anybody where we had not sent any letters where a meter has been exchanged.
Can you ask Carmel, when people with dual meters, night storage, can get a smart meter? Currently, we can't.
Yeah. So come September, we have the new meter that we have purchased. It's called a Sagemcom meter. It's from a company in France. And that new meter has allowed us to set that meter up as a day-night meter. So we are going to do what we call like-for-like exchanges. So that we'll take out the old day-night meter, we'll put in the new day-night meter, and it'll work the exact same. And again, like I had said earlier, the customer can then decide whether they want to stay on a day-night tariff or whether they want to go onto one of the interval tariffs or a day-night peak tariff, depending on whether it will save them money. So that's your normal day-night. There's another type of day-night meter where a customer has night storage meters. And what they have is they've two meters. They've a meter that only records for their night storage heating, and then they have another meter. So we have also, in September, we will also be starting exchanging the night storage heating meters where no night storage heating has been used in over a year or 2 years. So a lot of customers maybe had night storage heating 2 years ago, 10 years ago. They upgraded their heating systems. They took out the old night storage heating and then didn't want to pay to get the second meter removed. So we're going to be starting into those in September, and we're looking at the rest of them, how we're going to do that for early next year. So I would say hold on another couple of months and you're going to start seeing your day-night meters exchanged as well.
All right, two-part question. Do I have to pay for a smart meter? You've answered that already, no. Another, no. Why is an out-of-state company doing this work? I don't know who's doing it, but presumably...
We have three. Obviously, depending on the location, ESB network technicians are doing some of them, but as you can imagine, like trying to change 2 million meters over 5-6 years with all of the other work that's going on, new connections work, there just aren't enough people within ESB networks to do that. So we have three deployment contractors. We have a company called TLI, who are based out of Cork. We have a company it's called Cersei. They're based out of Dublin, and MDE are based out of Monaghan.
Okay,
so I don't know. I'm not sure where the out of state came from.
Well, you know yourself, this is why these kind of interviews are useful. I installed PV solar panels myself. Can I still sell my electricity back to the grid?
Yes. Yeah. If you have a smart meter, it has to be metered. I think the day night, a customer with a day night meter, it's deemed until we get the new meters in. But once you have a smart meter, it records all of the export to the network, and then your supplier gets that information and they can then pay based on the export value that's gone to the supplier from your smart meter.
I know you might not agree with them, Carmel, but this is their will, and they would feel they're right. They have a sign up on where the old meter is saying, I do not want a smart meter. Would that be respected? Is that an
accept? Yes.
That's okay. Right. Yep. Simple as okay. Let me see. If I change to a smart meter, will I lose my night rate?
No. Now again, this is like what some customers had said, that they wanted to go. They have a day-night meter and they wanted to go to a day-night peak rate. So in the old one, where we didn't have the like-for-like exchange, if you got a new smart meter, you had to go day-night peak. But from September, we have a new smart day-night meter. So nothing will change. You'll get your new smart meter with all of the information. You can look at your interval data, but you do not have to change tariff. And that's the point with any smart meter exchange. A customer does not change their tariff unless they opt to do so.
You know, like with broadband, they come in and they roll out the network and then everyone gets offered broadband at the same time. The smart meter rollout isn't necessarily like that, is it? And it's a question. It's more based on customer profile than location.
What Well, it started, obviously, we started small. We started in five planner groups back when we started back in 2019. We're now in all of our 34 planner groups across the country. So I think we're in Donegal would be covered by Letterkenny planner group and Killybegs planner group. So I think we started there early last year. So we're all over the country, but we did start in pockets. And so I'd say Longford was actually the last planner group that we went into. So we're only in Longford since February of this year. So that we would be last out of Longford, if you know what I mean,
yep.
Because we're going through.
But. All right, just a couple more here. I have a smart prepay power. Do I still have to get an ESB one? I think that's okay, tags on to the network, okay, doesn't it?
Yes is the answer, right? So if you have a lifestyle prepayment meter, that means you have a meter on the customer side of the interface. So we still have a meter of record, which is behind kind of the customer interface. So whether your lifestyle pay as you go or not, we will still want to exchange the meter for a smart meter for all of the reasons that I mentioned earlier, because it'll give good network information as well and will help us in the future for planning. If we have poor voltage somewhere, it'll highlight that to us as well.
Is there any place or portal that people can get further information if they have particular concerns? This listener says, 9 months ago, I sent a letter asking for information on the smart meter. I'm an older person. I can't do anything digital, so I decided to not get it. I wanted the information on paper. I posted twice asking the ESB for this. In return, I got a piece of paper with little to none information. It was really just a flyer. No personal letter addressing my six questions. I'm still left confused with regards to smart meters. So is there any portal or any sort of analog system where people can get more
you're
info?
You're right. Like, everything is on the ESB Networks website. So if anybody logs on to ESB Networks website, there's a whole smart page you go page. We have the frequently
asked
questions.
Yeah, but this gentleman.
So that's what I was going to say. But anybody who writes into us, now I'm surprised because I get a lot of letters. And if we get a list of questions from somebody who, we do provide the answers back in letter format. So I'm kind of surprised. So look, if you want to send me that customer's details separately, I'll check it out, because we do get. We get handwritten letters, we get typed letters, and we do respond to every letter that we get. So,
okay.
Sorry about that customer.
No, I understand.
We do try.
I don't know what this means. Smart meter, old meter has a 45 amp fuse, the new meter has a 32 amp fuse. Is there any significance to that, Carmel? I don't.
I'm not sure. All pieces of equipment would have their own internal fuse, a bit like your plug that would have a fuse, but sometimes I have heard people trying to maintain that there's an issue with that misinformation. But don't forget, every home has a cutout with the fuse that protects the house. And I'm really not aware of the difference between the fuses in the meter. But
finally, while we're clearing a few things up, Carmel, you know, there is people. I get that people have a concern that this means that Big Brother has more power, that they can switch off your power with the flick of a switch with these new smart meters. But I'm not saying that happens or doesn't happen. But but there's no extra capabilities, is there, that companies have that they didn't have before? Do smart meters offer any?
No. What I will say to you is we are working on a switch that will not be available before the end of next year for smart pay-as-you-go. So if a customer wants to opt for a pay-as-you-go option, we're working on that. And I think one of the reasons that CRU would like to see that in the Commission for Regulation of Utilities is because it will give customers more freedom to look and shop around for, you know, better value if they want to go for a pay-as-you-go product. But at no point will switching will always be on the basis of the rules that are there. And again, the data, we mind every piece of data that we get as if it was personal data. And I do believe the data will help us make a better network out there for customers, because it will highlight even before a customer has to ring in with a complaint that they have poor voltage in some way, shape or form. So I genuinely, and I'm not just saying this because obviously it's my job at the minute, but I really do think that smart meters are going to be a game changer, because they will give all that extra information to a customer that will allow them pick and choose when they want to use their electricity. But I think you said it earlier, like if a customer chooses to do nothing, They don't change the way they use their electricity. They don't change their tariff. They stay with their supplier. Nothing will change except that we will be able to pull actual reads, and a customer will always have an actual bill, and there'll be no under and over billing and catch up bills. That'll be a thing of the past. But I think they will give a lot more control, particularly if a customer has solar panels, they'll be able to get paid for their export, but they will be able to decide for themselves whether or not they want to change the way they use their electricity and save a bit of money.
Okay, thanks for your time this morning. That's Carmel O'Connor, ESB Network Smart Metering Project Manager, obviously a strong advocate of smart meters. Maybe you had your concerns, or, you know, has your views changed, or have they been strengthened? Are you more inclined to get one, or did everything that you thought, was it just confirmed and you'll never get one? 086 60 25000, WhatsApp and text, let us know what you think. Okay, you're very welcome back to what was a really busy 9 till noon show. Thank you so much for getting involved in the conversation as you have. Greg, tell you to save electricity, but the smart meter tariff hours are terrible. I'm a carer and I have to make dinner at certain times and wash clothes during the day. Well, just stay where you are. Don't go on the night tariffs. I personally wouldn't, because I don't have a car to plug in. And also, I'm not putting on the dishwasher or the washing machine or the dryer or anything at night, because I wouldn't sleep. So I can't see how I might benefit from cheaper electricity at night. So that would be my feelings. Management need to get their act together and stop wasting taxpayers' money. Gullies never cleaned or manholes. Waste money fixing roads before that's fixed. Another, is the Glengad water affected? I'm not really quite sure if that was on the list. I'll have to relook at the list. The council or politicians can't stop nature? No, but that's like saying, that's like saying don't use an umbrella because you can't stop nature, but you can. You can stop the rain falling on your head. And if you build proper drainage system and have wide gullies and wide waste pipes and what have you, you can direct nature away from people's homes and businesses. So, yeah, of course, you can't stop nature, but you can protect yourself from it. I live in McBride Street in Rafoe here. We were flooded on Saturday evening. The street was like a raging river. A few premises were badly hit. What I'm angry about is not one councillor, except for Frank McBurty, appeared to have a look around. Council have not even sent out anyone to unblock drains or clean up in any way, says that listener. There is no mention of architects or engineers who will have more of an idea of what the implications are for people who take up the new scheme. What are their views? Well, we're hoping, as I say, still when the dust settles, to get a panel together to sort of take some test cases of this is a house of this size and in that area and so on and so forth, and see if we can start answering those types of questions for people. I live on an estate at the end of Rafoe, heading up towards Mongorrie Hill. My house and the adjoining house are beside the Swill Burn. When I came home on Saturday evening at 6:30 p.m, there was only a trickle of water running down the road, but just after 7, the Swill burst. I've been here 14 years and that was definitely the worst I've seen. The last time was February 21. I was lucky I didn't get any water in the house, but my neighbour wasn't. There's a small wall in the back between our houses and the water backed up there and went in her back door. The water flowing past our homes was strong enough to pull a full bag of coal from the front of my neighbour's house and sent it down the road. The council were out just after 8 and it was after 11 when they got the water slowed down. We have no quick access in the town to sandbags, and I think if people in the town did, we could be better prepared. If this happened in the middle of the night when people were in bed asleep, the damage in our homes could be worse. Yeah, indeed, you see again, just something as simple. Can you get anything simpler than filling a bag with some sand so that you can put it at your back door or what have you? But people don't have that local access. I hope that's something that is done ASAP. Why do these flood prevention schemes take so long? I've read that. I don't know what the story is. Certain areas are prone to flooding. It happens all over, especially low-lying areas. But certain places that weren't prone to flooding are now prone to flooding. It can be for a number of reasons. It can be a change in how the rain falls. We know statistically, for whatever reason, and we can argue the toss over it forever and a day, but statistically, over the last 30 years, we have 8% more rain than we had 30 years ago. So, I mean, that is a significant jump. That's almost a 10% fall in rain increase. That doesn't mean over the course of the year. That can be in a single month. across a month, across a day. But we do now have, for one reason or another, 7, 8% more rainfall. Don't know why that is. I do know how it is. Some people might say it's for this reason or that reason. There's no doubt in my mind that the climate is changing. So there are places that were never flooded before that were flooded or get flooded. And also there are works that can happen further upstream, in inverted commas, that can cause flooding downstream where flooding didn't exist before. There's lots of variables. Just drove through Rathfown. I see Minister Charlie McConnell talking to people on the street. Lovely, that's great. How often do people take it upon themselves to clean a manhole and clean a drain for when the big spill of rain comes? I don't know what the maintenance programme is in that regard, to be honest with you, but a lot of people feel it doesn't happen. This has been happening for years. Didn't they say we are due a mini ice age before this happens? They say the weather will go up and down. It would appear that's on its way. What is the ESB doing to keep power when they're encouraging everyone into the power grid, which can't take the capacity it already has? Last one before we have to bid you adieu. The council has failed Rathfown in a major way, believes this listener. The water and sewage system hasn't been updated in years, and any work was done by Councillor McBurty. The damage at the weekend would have been worse had he not have done his work out of his own pocket. Multiple examples of building continues, but no infrastructure is looked at, they say. Actually, we do have time for a couple more. The bridge in Rathfown collapsed and traffic had to be redirected, but most of this was done out of the goodness and hard work of the local council work people and locals in the area. Have these people, these poor people who were flooded, do they have any insurance, or have the insurance companies stopped covering these areas? Well, we heard from one, he has insurance if a plane hits the roof, but not if it's flooded. That's the suspicion. People can't get flood protection insurance any longer because of past flooding history. Okay, well, listen, we're going to return to that as much as we have to over time, and until we find out such time as something as simple as a pile of sand and bags are located in these areas or whatever else may need to be done. Stay in touch with us, 086 60 25000. You can text at any time, we can pick them up. Maybe you're listening to the podcast or our replay overnight, you can still text in. We'll carry those messages on the next live broadcast, which is tomorrow morning at 9. Have a lovely day.